Well, we're talking about listening, and last week I came in, our family lives in Mount Lookout, so Oakley's our closest campus, so came in here even though I wasn't speaking last week, and the very first thing that we did last week was a massive bugle cry that I heard. I mean, Pete Zimmer did a pretty interesting job blowing that bugle last week, did he not? Interesting. Take a look at Pete here, got a little photo of him. I mean, he just looks dashing, doesn't he? Really, really dashing. And I was just curious what the other campus pastors look like. So Florence, here's Terry down front. Doesn't he look cute? He just is so cute. And then here's my favorite right here, Mark Stetcher up in Mason. And, you know, I'm really not trying to be political at all, but, you know, seeing this, if I was a gay man, I would want to join the Boy Scouts. I absolutely would. That would be funny if it was said by anybody, any place else, but you're going, what's he trying to say? I'm not trying to say anything about that. Just lighten up. But gosh, that's just funny right there. That's just funny. So I wish that God's voice was as unmistakable as a bugle blast to me. I wish it was. Many of us feel like God doesn't talk or he's never talked with me because we've never heard an audible sound where there was words creating decibels hitting our eardrum, and therefore we haven't heard from God. I want to tell you, you have heard from God. You might not have noticed it was him. God is always speaking. He's always doing something in us and through us. The question is whether or not we notice it. We're so immersed in so many other things that we don't slow down to notice, as Chuck challenged us last week, to notice what God is saying. In America, there is 435 million internet-connected devices in our homes. 435 million. More internet-connected devices than we have actually people in the United States. And we become so used to that stimuli that the stimuli that God produces goes unnoticed. We've put some stimuli all around the building today. I don't know if you noticed or not. There was a little ear stickers coming into the atrium, on windows, on glass, on coffee cups, on volunteer badges and program. Some of you go, well, I was wondering what was going on with those stupid things. That was you paying attention to something and noticing. Others of us are going, well, I didn't see a single one of that. You probably are one who's not prone to notice things. We have to train ourselves to notice the voice of God. One person I ran across said this: our largest poverty is we can't pay attention. I wasn't paying attention long enough to know who said that, but it was interesting. I actually wrote that down. And it is true. And our largest spiritual poverty is we don't pay attention to what God is doing throughout us, all the time, all the places. This last week, I was taking Chuck's challenge and just trying to notice things. And I realized that when God speaks to me, I've never heard an audible voice, but I've heard God speak to me regularly. It's like gamma rays that's coming to us. It's like the sun. It's always there. Jesus says that my Father is always at work up to the present time, and I too am working. So God is always working. He's always talking. And one of the ways that I know that he's talking to me is when I have recurring thoughts that I think that God would approve of. And especially if they're thoughts that I have that are ones that I wouldn't normally generate myself, I know that's what God would want. One has been recurring to me over weeks. Started after the Super Bowl service. We talked about momentum. Wasn't it interesting during the Super Bowl? We talked about momentum shifts, and we saw a Super Bowl that was as much defined by momentum as any Super Bowl. I mean, the comeback wasn't complete, but it was fascinating. My people were texting me, this is unbelievable. We just talked about this in church today. Yes, it was pretty cool. Well, after that, I started noticing and thinking through the areas of my life that I don't have momentum in is in my marriage. Not that our marriage is bad, not that we're on the edge. Just, you know, when you got momentum in something, things are clicking, things are going, and the thought came to me repeatedly. Finally, I just said, God, we need to talk about this. So Liv and I have been having some conversations about how to get momentum going back in our marriage. And she put some prayers for me to pray up on our mirror. Kind of cool things. Just gets momentum going. A whole list of them. Like, please forgive me for being a crappy husband. Those kind of things. Prayer. No, none of those. Just really good ones. But this whole conversation has come up because hearing from God, and then following through on it. this is how God speaks with me. I don't know how he speaks with you, but I know some of us, we feel a bit underwhelmed by the presence of God because we've never heard an audible voice. And we think that, well, if I could be like the people in the Bible who had an audible voice, then I would hear God and I would do what he wants me to do as well. I've read the Bible several times. Now let me tell you something. There are people in there who've heard audible voices from God, but it's the rare exception. It's the rare exception. The great hearers of the faith have not all heard audible voices from God. The Apostle Paul, who's responsible for writing more of the New Testament than any other individual, hears an audible voice from God once. It's when he first comes to know Christ. Once that we're aware of. Another time we're aware of, he has an angel visit him. Other than that, I don't know, there's no other supernatural things that happens for him to receive information from God. In fact, when the early church is making decisions, they say things like, it seemed right to us in the Holy Spirit. Barnabas, another hero of the faith in the New Testament, no recording at all of him hearing a voice from God. Same with Silas. Apostle Peter, no recording at all. I mean, he's with Jesus for 3 years, so he's hearing God there. But after that, he has a dream. Supernatural things are happening. But we're really not seeing the normal person who is a great in God's eyes having unmistakable decibel encounters with God. So we have to get over this thing that I can't hear from God. You can hear from God. It's in a different way that I might hear. It's in a different language. It's in a different stimuli. But God is always speaking. This is what he wants his children to do. And he doesn't want us just to hear, but he wants us to listen. What does it mean when we listen? It means we do, right? That's the difference between hearing and listening. We hear, meaning our eardrum picks up the stimuli, but we know we're listening when we actually apply and follow through. Jesus says this in the book of Matthew chapter 7, verse 24 to 29. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them, that's listening, will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. Jesus says, when you hear my words and listen to them as in put them in practice, you will have a stability about your life. You will have a weightiness about your life. You will have an ability to endure things that other people can't endure. And the interesting thing about this little passage here is it's the concluding illustration of the greatest, the most well-known speech of all time. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. Now, if you're older, you probably have heard of this. If you're the younger you are, the less likely you are to have ever heard of the Sermon on the Mount. You could have been an atheist in 1950s America, and everyone heard of the Sermon on the Mount. The younger you are, the less likely you have ever heard of it. It's a time when Jesus pulled around some followers or potential followers who was on a mount, and he just lays out all these teachings relating to the heart of God, the way God would have us live our lives that is different. And this passage, I'm going to get back to that passage in just a moment, doesn't fully make sense unless you understand who the leader is and how he operates differently. So let's talk about how to follow the leader. Three things happen when you follow the leader. You hear things that are different, difficult, and you do them. One, you hear things that are different. When I hear words from the leader, it's different. Sometimes God speaks to us, and all he says is, you're doing well. We feel a sense of encouragement. Maybe he speaks to us because somebody else encourages us, and it's as if they're speaking on God's behalf. Maybe we feel it because we're just... maybe earlier, watching that video with that song, we just felt a level of joy and peace. That's God speaking to you, telling you that he appreciates you and loves you. Oftentimes, God speaks these things to us. Other times, when God speaks to us, it's stimuli that tells us to go a different direction because it's different than what the normal course of this world has. It's different. In the Sermon on the Mount, every single thing that Jesus says is contrary to common knowledge. Everything that Jesus says is contrary to common practices. The very beginning of it, he says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Who wants to be poor in spirit? Now, we want to be rich in spirit, but when you're poor, you have a level of dependence on somebody else. And Jesus says, he wants us to be poor before God, to have a level of dependence on him and not be independent of him. This is the first contrary thing, but it keeps going on and on and on. In fact, five times he says, you've heard it said, but I say to you. Common knowledge is this, but I say to you. One time he says, you've heard it said, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, but I say to you, turn the other cheeks. Let me just give you a brief Cliff Note version of how crazy and different this communication from God. He says, if you're angry and insulting somebody, you're as separate from God as if you had physically murdered them. He goes on and says, if you're having private sexual fantasies about people you're not married to, you are as physically, or you are spiritually separate from God as if you had physically murdered them. This is a great sermon, isn't it? It's really, I can't believe people have really heard these things and thought, it's the most well-known sermon in the history of the world. He goes on and says, when you are hit, turn the other cheek. Don't retaliate. In fact, when you're insulted, don't retaliate. What do we say? We say, hey, I don't get mad, I get. Yeah, we know the Constitution of how it operates, the Constitution of anger. Jesus says, when you have an enemy, bless them, pray for them. Because even the worst of all society, they love people who love them, but you love people who hate you. Bless people who are your enemies. He says, don't do things in public in order to be seen by other people. Do things in order to be seen by God. Don't try to be seen. Gosh, what would he say about Instagram and Facebook today? When's the last time you pasted something on the web that made yourself look not very good? Yeah, that would be never. That would be never. And this is how nonprofits run as well. It's the normal way of the world, you know? I mean, gosh, we got to promise people public accolades. If they give my soul, we'll give them a table name. We'll put them in the program. We'll give them a room. We'll go to, because this is the way the world, Jesus says, hey, if you get known for what you've done, that's fine, but never do anything. Never be Lord to do anything because there'll be public notoriety behind it. He says, forgive others and God will forgive you. In fact, if you don't forgive people, God won't forgive you. Ooh. Well, I got to work it out. I'm not ready to forgive. Okay, fine. God's not forgiving you for anything. Ooh. This is crazy. I'd love to go do a deep dive in this. I'll just leave Jesus at his words. We'll just leave it right there. And he goes on, and unique rewards God will give. Unique rewards. Be more excited about those unique rewards than anything that a moth can eat, any high-class sweater, anything that can rust, any car. How often are we more excited about an iPhone 5 than what God might do for us in heaven? I don't have an iPhone 5, but I want one. I do want one. I will get one. He says this, don't be fearful about anything that hasn't happened yet. He said, worry about the trouble today. Today, we don't call it, oh, I'm afraid about this. We'll use better words like, I'm stressed. I'm stressed about anything you are stressed about that has not actually happened is fear, and it shows there's something wrong with us. Jesus says, no, only worry about what is actually going wrong in your life right now. That's all we're allowed to fear. Jesus says, don't feel superior to anybody else, no matter what their issues are. You let your own issues be the issue. Take the speck out of your own eye, or the log out of your own eye first. He goes on and says, ask God freely for blessings. Ask God freely for blessings. What do we say? God helps those who help themselves. It's not the Bible, that's Ben Franklin. So you got to earn God's approval. You got to earn God's help. Jesus says, go to him gracefully. Work. Do the things that you know you need to do. Fine, but go to him, and he's a gracious giver. Jesus says, be proactive in doing good. It's the golden rule. Not just don't do bad to other people. Be proactive in doing good. He says, have a different kind of life. You will have a fruit in your life that's different about you than other people. You can tell a tree by its fruit. And then he goes on and says another thing. He says, gosh, all the people you know who say they have prophecies, who do prophesy, who have miracles of healing, who do all these crazy things. Here's the thing. Some of those folks, I'm going to say to them, get away from me. You disgust me. I never knew you. This is weird. And we think, gosh, if you can do spiritual things and obviously you're close with God, not according to Jesus, you can do very spiritual things and not be close to God at all. See, all these things are totally counter. There's not a single thing in this sermon, if I said it, you would applaud. That's a good sermon today. It was an awful sermon. It was an awful. No, none of us can uphold any of these things. None of these things made what you'd build a big church by. I mean, these things were about as popular as a fart in a spacesuit. I don't care who you are. That's funny right there. That's funny right there. Well, I can't wait for my emails this week. It's going to be great. One of the best preachers of the last century is a former physician. His name is Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones. And in his book on the Sermon on the Mount, he puts this in perspective. These Beatitudes crush me to the ground. They show me my utter helplessness. Were it not for the new birth, I'm undone. Read it and study it. Face yourself in the light of it. He said, we're not for the fact that there is a Savior who can give me a new birth and give me power. I couldn't live up to these things. They drive me to realize that I am inadequate. When God talks to you, it's not always that you will be crushed, but when he talks to you, if he's not affirming you, he's going to be telling you something different than everybody else is doing. And the reason why many of us don't hear from God is we don't want to hear anything different. We only want to hear what everybody will approve of. We only will want to hear what we're currently doing is okay. And when I follow the leader, I'm having to take a different path because I'm hearing and I'm responding and I'm doing what God would have me to do. I ran across a clip recently of a radio program that shows a picture of somebody who I believe is not willing to hear or consider anything different. It's an interview on NPR with Quentin Tarantino, and it was actually a very jovial interview. Everything was, you know, it was all going good and all well, until the interviewer started to ask some different probing questions. Let's check this out and talk about it. Now, I don't know anything about Quentin Tarantino. Let's just assume that he's great, he's tight with God, all's good there. Let's just talk about the interview. Do you get the perspective that he's not used to anybody asking him anything different? You get the perspective that, like, no one ever gives him conflicting information that he has to wrestle with? I mean, completely ill-equipped to have a rational conversation about something around his work. Odd. Really, really odd. It's an example, according to the interview, of somebody who only wants to do and believe the same thing he's always done and believed and not see anything outside of that. Now, not trying to be political here at all. Equal opportunity offender. Those of us on the right, those of us on the left will be offended right now. Here we go. All the massacres of this similar sort that have happened over the last several years, from what I can see, there's two things all of them have in common, and only two things. I'm talking about Columbine, I'm talking about the one in the movie theater, I'm talking about Sandy Hook. Two things all of them had in common. They all involved guns, and they were all gamers. All guns, use guns, and all gamers. And you don't, in and of the natural way of the world, we will never think there should be something different that I do. It's always somebody else. So you don't hear anybody on the right who owns guns saying, maybe we ought to reevaluate our gun policy. No one's saying that. You don't hear anybody on the left, it's all for free speech, saying maybe we're affecting a culture of violence and knowing people. You don't hear anybody doing that. No one is doing that. Now, I've got a couple guns, because I'm not anti-gun. I've done Wii bowling, so I'm not like anti-gaming. I'm not really trying to make a statement against games or against guns. All I'm trying to say is, can we not see that when you're on the right, all you say, look, I'm not going to give my constitutional amendment right to bear arms. On your left, look, talk about movies, games, your censorship, right to free speech. And we should expect in the world people who don't love God, who don't want God, to do exactly that. That's exactly what we should expect. I'm saying for you and for me, if you're a person who wants more of God and wants God to get more of you, we have got to get used to doing different. We've got to get used to hearing different and not just explaining away everything that we're doing right now. The leader wants you to follow, and it oftentimes means going a different way. And because it's different, it's number two, it's difficult. When the leader speaks, it's difficult. Now, when I say difficult, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily painful. It could be, but it doesn't mean that you know, it's going to be agony. It just means that when something is different, it's a bit awkward, right? Cross your arms right now. This is not Simon Says. So just go ahead and cross your arms. Some of you want to do this whole time. You're going, yeah, I hate that guy up there. Just go ahead and cross your arms. Now, cross your arms in the opposite direction. Feels a little difficult, isn't it? A little awkward. Some of you, I see some of you looking down like, oh, wait a minute, this hand was there. Some way it's just like this. How do I, you know, we're doing that whole thing. This is what it's like when you hear the voice of God. It's different, and it'll be somewhat difficult because it's not something you're currently doing, and not necessarily hard either, not necessarily painful. It's just going to be a bit awkward to you. And we have to get used to this if we want to hear the voice of God and we want to respond to it. The most powerful things God has told me have been difficult. not painful. Most of them, like the stuff, the conversation I talked about, that wasn't, I mean, that was difficult, but it was good, it was painful. I mean, it was good. It was ultimately pleasurable. It is becoming more pleasurable. It's ultimately a better thing. But there are some times when you're faced with something that God might be saying to you, and you're going, oh man, I don't know how I'm going to do that. I don't know. One of the bigger ones for me happened a few years ago, when I decided to go over to India. People were saying, Brian, you got to go over to India. We're putting lots of Jack into International Justice Mission, helping girls come out of forced prostitution. We've got to get you over there. I said, really? Okay, I'll go. I wasn't really excited about going, but I figured, okay, probably a good idea to go. So I went over and did a tour of a variety of things. And most impactful time was, I think it was the last night. Went to a home. It was really crowded. Girls were smiling. But there was one girl in this one meeting I was in who was towards the back of the room, and she was rolling her shoulders forward, hunched down, and then looking up through her eyebrows. She looked to me like a beat dog. You know, when a dog is beat, this is what happens to them. That's what happened with her. She had an awful, awful background with her pimp. She was being like a beat dog, which is making yourself small so no one notices you and constantly exhibiting submissiveness so that no one bothers you. I found out her story afterwards. It's awful, awful story. And as we came home from this home, we were in this bouncy car, and I was asking the people in the car who were experts in this, what's going on here? What's the problem? How can more help be given? Found out that a major logjam was the amount of homes. They weren't rescuing a lot more girls because they had no place to put them. Why should the Indian government get involved if that was the case? And why aren't there more homes? Where would they be? Could you send people over to build them as work projects? Could you do this? Would you have all these answers? I kept being stimulated to ask another question. And I was actually surprised. Why am I keep asking questions? I wasn't all that passionate about this before I came over. I felt like it was the right thing to do. I wasn't all that passionate about it. And why? Because I noticed, okay, God's speaking to me. He piques my curiosity on things when he starts to talk. It's one of the things he does for me. He piques my curiosity. He gives me ideas that I know that in and of myself I probably can't do and would never choose to do in and of myself. And that's where I resolved after hearing him in the back of that car, as far as I can do and as Crossroads can do, we're going to end the child sex slave crisis over in India. It was a voice of God as I heard and wandered. And here's the good thing I told you about before. Every time God speaks and you do it, you always get rewarded. Always. There is always a payoff. Maybe not immediately, but there will always be a payoff. And we're getting some payoff right now. Check out this video.
The State Department tells us that there are about 2.3 million women and children who are held in forced prostitution. So you should just take the population of the entire metropolitan Cincinnati area, and that's fewer than the number of women and children who are right now ground up in the business of rape for profit.
Volleyball. I like my friends and house mothers because they are very good. That place is like our own home. When I was small, I never see my childhood. So I'm experiencing childhood now. for that. Thank you very much.
We hope to, that they will stay for a period of 18 months to 2 years in our homes, and they will continue with education, they will continue with training, they will be able to achieve their goal. It would be as mature women, women who are earning a sustainable salary, women who have progressed a lot more on the path of healing and restoration, and you know, women of substance who can hold their own in society. No one will ever be able to tell that they've had such a horrible past, because they will see them as women who are leaders. Everyone can look up to and be inspired.
I want to be a social worker because I was in Advait Foundation. There used to come social workers. They helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. So after seeing them, I'm thinking I must be like that only because they helped me. So I also should help others.
I pray for Keith and I pray for our staff too, because we would never fall short of their trust or integrity. I pray that we would have many more homes and many more girls in our homes. And for our girls, pray that, you know, along with causing them to dream the dream, that we would really be just the right channel to help them realize their dreams.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, every facility you saw there, every staff member we paid for, we're financing that. And I'm not aware of any other worldwide organization that started 6 homes in the last couple of years. And we're on a pace right now, we're building foundation, we should be able to double that if all continues in 2013. And on and go. Now, I can't tell you the joy that I personally feel of my small part of hearing from God. That girl who was given her main testimony, when we first interacted with her 4 years ago, she wouldn't talk. She wouldn't talk. And now she's bubbly and saying, I want to go and help other people the way they have helped me. I'm telling you, God talks with you. It will be different. It may be difficult, but it always pays. Always pays if you do it. If you do it, if you actually follow through. French novelist and playwright, Honoré de Beaulieu, he said this, it is easy to sit up and take notice. What is difficult is getting up and taking action. Noticing that God's saying something, noticing that I have a thought that's outside my normal thought, noticing that there's a feeling I have that is the kind of feeling that God would approve of, noticing that there's an opportunity that Jesus would do if he was here, it is one thing, but it's another thing to actually get up and move in a different place. And this is why we need to get it done. We follow the leader when we follow, when we do it. Hearing the leader's voice results in having it be done. Now, I've had things where I've heard from God where maybe it's on a larger macro scale with India, but boy, the things I really get most excited about are the smaller micro things that are just tests between me and God as to whether or not I'm hearing and responding. This last week, as I was doing our homework assignments, I just was extra noticing various things, and one of the things I noticed is I've had this thought for a while. When I go down the kitchen in the morning, I'm always the first one up in our house, and I go in, I open up the refrigerator. There's a packed lunch in there for my youngest daughter to go to school. And I've had the thought a number of times of, boy, I used to put a lot of notes in the older kids' lunches. I don't really do that anymore. See, here's the way it works. When you're a younger parent, you got kids like, bam, bam, my first two kids were 2 years apart, Lib and I, you're like in parenting mode, bam, 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 you're like hitting your marks. And then you take like a 5-year hiatus, and all of a sudden the next kid comes along, you're older, you know, you're tired, the parenting thing isn't as quite as fresh any longer. My older kids, they say, Daddy, read me another chapter. I said, okay, honey, I'll read another chapter. Youngest one said, Daddy, read me another chapter. No, kid, go to bed. Daddy's tired. Daddy's tired. Time to watch television. You got to go to bed, you know. no more love for you. Go to bed. You don't say that, but that's exactly what you're thinking. Is there any older parent who I can identify with that at all? Yes. And so I just noticed that bag there. And every time I would notice that bag and think about it, I realized this is God saying something to me here. So this last week, a couple times, I went and redid an old discipline I had when I pull out a little index card, pull a little Sharpie, and just a real brief encouragement note of love to my youngest daughter. And first time I put it in, she hadn't got one for a long, long time. I was afraid she'd miss it or wouldn't see it. And so at night at dinner, I said, honey, did you get anything in your lunchbox? She said, yeah, I did. She pulled it out of her back pocket. She kept it. Well, you know, it's a special thing when you hear something from God because he truly wants to help you. When you hear something from God because he truly wants to add value to you and enlist you in his work. Jesus said, my Father is always at work, even under the present time, and I too am working. And so when we're a follower of Jesus, we are a worker. We're somebody who actually does and steps in. So Jesus, at the end of this sermon, that gives us an unsurmountable things to do that no one will naturally do in and of their own selves, his final conclusion is that whole building our lives on him, building our lives on the rock. Here's how it concludes. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. So everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them, or you should be doing, this is listening. I hear and I actually do. He's articulating a construction reality and a spiritual reality. A construction reality is you want to have your house on a strong foundation. You want to have it on rock, or you want to create a rock footer with concrete that goes all the way around the perimeter of all your external walls. And here's the interesting thing, what he says here too. What he says wouldn't be popular with televangelists today, because televangelists would tell you and I, hey, you know, you just pray the right prayers and you just follow God and you just tithe and you just do your right prayer things and problems won't come your way, all be good. No, that's not at all what Jesus says. Nothing. Everybody gets wind and waves. Everybody gets one. In fact, he doesn't say earlier on in the sermon, don't fear tomorrow, because that won't happen. No, he says, don't worry about tomorrow, because today you have trouble today. Work on the trouble today. And here's the thing. Everybody gets trouble. Everybody. Everybody gets wind. Everybody gets waves. It's just a matter of the frequency and the intensity. Everybody gets, and the timing of it. And so what Jesus says is, when you hear from your Father that which is different, and when you do that which is difficult, you will have a foundation. And I am that foundation, because you can't do it on your own. I am that foundation. And you will have a platform to go to do new places or to weather the difficult things that come your way. Maybe the greatest thing that God might be saying to you right now is receive Jesus as your rock. To put your life on his foundation. To say a prayer that says, I want to receive you into my life. I want to give my life to you. In fact, that is the most important thing that your Heavenly Father will ever tell you, and he's telling that to everybody. We're going to do a song that speaks to that truth of how Jesus is a rock and he overcomes all of our weaknesses through his death. And it's a classic song. It's been sung for hundreds of years. I've had it on my mind all week. I feel like God was talking to me this week on this song because it kept on my mind. Even though I don't normally sing this song, it was on my mind. I was humming it all week. So I asked Andrea to do the song with us, and she graciously decided to do it. Let's pray right now. God, thank you for speaking to us. It's a weird and crazy thing that the God of the universe takes notice of small creatures like ourselves. Thank you. Thank you that you care enough to talk. I pray that you would help us to notice even more your voice to each one of us this week. And right now I'm praying that we would notice in a fresh way the work of your Son, the greatest leader that's ever been known.